I want to see Rob on the horse.
Karen, I can make that happen for you. Okay. After the wife comment. I owe him one.
Welcome to the Major League Eventing Podcast, the show for eventing fans by eventing fans.
So we want to thank our sponsor, Running Good Equestrian, for sponsoring our podcast today. And winter's coming. They make a really nice jumpsuit for the ladies, Karen. It's a nice insulated jumpsuit. Has a bunch of cool little features, right?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, so anyone that... Listen back to our Running Good Equestrian introduction. And
our listeners can receive a $40 discount if they put in a promo code MLE40.
Yeah. So check it out, guys. Go to runninggoodequestrian.com. Check the show notes for the link if you have trouble following that. And use promo code, like Karen said, MLE40 for $40 off. And it's really cool. It's really nice. It's going to keep you warm and fashionable. And, you know, you can use it for all types of cool stuff, right, Karen?
Oh, absolutely. From the barn to the ski slopes.
Barn to the ski slopes. So a lot of people are saying they want to use it when they're clipping their horses to keep, the hair from getting embedded in their daily clothes. So,
oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So this is for anybody. Good gift for the holidays. So check them out. Running Good Equestrian.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Rob. And on today's Major League Eventing Podcast, Karen,
yeah,
our listeners, if they've been listening recently, they've been hearing that we've been talking about the combination of Buck Davidson and Landsafe Equestrian coming together, and we've been promoting the Bringing Safety to the Forefront clinic that they're doing together. And we're really excited to bring on the Landsafe man himself, Danny Warrington. So, Danny, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Oh, we're very, very excited. We, fun fact, Karen.
Uh-oh, what's that?
We're practically neighbors with Danny.
Yeah.
Right? Are you local right now, Danny?
Yeah, we actually just got back from Equine Affair up in Massachusetts. We were up there last week for that big trade show. But yeah, we're right. We're home this week and, for 2 days, and then, we're actually off to the Jockey Club down in Florida.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
But yeah, we're right here in Northeast Maryland. Yep.
Awesome. Yeah. We are Northeasters too. We all share the same favorite restaurant.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Tony down at Steak and Main, right? We give a plug for Steak and Main.
Oh, right? Yeah.
That's the best sushi in Upper Maryland for sure.
Yeah, sure is.
He's got it all. We love that guy. It's so funny that, you go way back with Tony, but listeners probably don't care. But if you're in the area, Fair Hill or Plantation, and you want a good steak or good sushi, that's definitely the place to go.
So, Danny, before we get into the Landsafe, can you tell us about your story? How did you get your start in riding?
So I started riding when I was 3. Wow. My dad was an avid fox hunter right here. We used to hunt with Louisville as a kid. Louisville hounds with Jack Darty and Fairhill and all of that. And, sort of through my adolescence, you know, sort of my 10 to 14 year old years, you know, my dad was a whip for Vic Mead Hunt down in sort of Middletown, Delaware. So as a kid, you know, sort of 8, 10, 12 years old, I was fox hunting 2-3 times a day.
Wow.
Or a week, not day, but yeah. Yeah, I never went to school. It's part of my brother. I went on my first fox hunt with Louisville Hounds right there over the border by Fair Hill when I was 5.
Wow.
And was riding and showing and all of that very early on, and was just lucky, you know. You know, I kept asking for motorcycles and I kept getting more ponies. I never did get into motorcycles, which probably worked out for me. But yeah, the riding career started very, very early.
How about that? And when did you start eventing?
So I didn't start eventing. So I didn't start eventing until really sort of 2002-ish, right? I don't have a sort of solid date on that because it kind of fell into play. But I actually, when I was 14, I started, going to the, well, I used to go to Fair Hill Training Center, before school and would gallop a couple of horses there.
Okay.
And then I would go to school, and eventually sort of in my senior year, I was actually sort of doing a work release program for not like jail, but for
Cecil Detention Center.
I just want to make sure that that's clear that it was not a work release program, but it was a, you know, half and half program. But I would actually go to Delaware Park and ride until about 10 o'clock and then show up at school around 11 and have afternoon classes, where most people sort of in my, you know, age group or whatever, they would actually go to school in the morning and then leave in the afternoon. And I actually got sort of a bit of special permission to do what I was doing because I was doing that. And I rode my first steeplechase race in 1987. And so I actually rode races through 1997.
Wow.
Was the last race. So I started a 10-year steeplechase career. I wasn't leading jockey, but I was, you know, sort of on the circuit a bit and rode some winners. And, you know, for a while I rode for Jonathan Shepherd, who's the leading trainer, up until just a few years ago. I mean, the guy's a Hall of Famer.
Wow.
So, you know, I did okay there. And then took a sabbatical after Amanda's accident. And then when I came back to the area, I actually was assistant trainer here for Michael Dickinson. And that's how I actually came back to Maryland. And then I had bought a horse and, you know, I'd sort of had done it for fun. And the next thing I was riding the thing. And the next thing I was eventing it. And the next thing I went advanced. And the next thing I had a kind of a career in eventing. So kind of the accidental eventer, to be perfectly honest.
How about
But as I got into the sport, sort of the attraction of the three disciplines, you know, and the never ending learning of what this sport brings to everyone is unbelievable. And so for me, sort of coming from racing, it was a pretty hard struggle to understand dressage at all. It took me quite a while, and some people might actually say I still never got it. But we give it a good shot. So, that's kind of how I got to eventing. And then along the way, sort of got involved in the safety committee and things like that. I wrote an article in 2000, I guess it was 8, about rider responsibility. And that kind of propelled me to the forefront of kind of where I am now.
Wow. So just to take a step back, so the 10 years that you were steeplechase racing, is that like a full-time career? Like, is that a, like a full-time job?
I guess we kind of try to make it that way, really. I mean, you know, we gallop in the morning and we race on the weekends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, it's kind of like eventing in the fact that, you know, you're on the road every weekend going somewhere to compete. And during the week, you know, instead of, you know, I would say most of the professionals, you know, or sort of at home training their horses, we're galloping horses for, you know, trainers, and we're working that way. And then we get to go off and go racing. And the racing sort of started at the end of February. There used to be and there still is. I mean, I say used to because I used to go, but it still exists. Is Casanova point to point starts off the point to point season in Virginia. And then it runs right through what I was riding. I was just at the steeplechase office today in Maryland, but we would run through sort of late November was the Colonial Cup in South Carolina.
Wow.
So, you know, it was kind of a good season. The summer was a bit slow. We would do the major tracks. So I got to ride at Belmont Park. I got to ride at Garden State Park, Delaware Park. I got to ride at Saratoga. One of my small claim to fames is when I was about, I must've been 19 years old, and I went into Belmont and to ride, and the first person that I walk into the jock's room is Angel Cordero, who, if anybody remembers Angel Cordero, was the Mike Smith of the 80s and 70s and was unbelievable. And he had just had a really bad ride for Lucas and was yelling. And one of the greatest things, it was amazing, right? So here I am 19 years old, and there's my idol, my hero, right? And he's having a hissy fit about another idol and hero, Dwayne Lucas. And I'm like, oh my God, where am I? But he had a great saying, and I still use it. You know, he was mad because Lucas was mad at him for not riding the horse very well, or what he thought was very well. And Cordero said to Lucas, he said, you know, you can only ride the horse as fast as he can run. And I sort of use that all the time. I'm like, you know, even in eventing that applies, like, you can only jump a horse as good as it can jump. You're only as good in this sport as the horse that you're on, and you can help improve them, but you have to be on good horses to be at the top, you know, and that's in any discipline in the equestrian sport for sure.
How about that? So here you are, you see your idol and you're like, you're behind the scenes. That's gotta be a pretty cool feeling. Yeah. All of a sudden you're behind the scenes and you're hearing them.
It's unbelievable. You know, I mean, I had the same valet in Saratoga as Mike Smith does, you know, Frank, and he still is actually Mike Smith's valet. So just like the ability to be in that circle and around those people and that quality of horsemanship and rider and it's just amazing. It just really is amazing. I never didn't appreciate it, and I still appreciate it to this day, you know, to watch Mike Smith win the Triple Crown and know that, you know, he and Pat Day and I stood and watched the video one day of those two, you know, sort of exchanging pleasantries on a turn. we'll leave it at that. It's pretty amazing, you know, a kid from Cecil County to end up there and actually sort of be able to know all of those things is pretty special, you know, pretty special to have done all that and really to, you know, have grown up here and I've been able to ride. I've ridden everything at Fairhill, right? So I've ridden the flat race, the timber race, the hurdle race, every level of eventing. Having done all that is a pretty, you know, for a kid from the area, it's pretty exciting. You know, I'm pretty proud of being able to do all that. And like I said, it's just the experiences that I've been given over my career, I'm pretty grateful for.
That is pretty cool. And you've done, mm-hmm. You went up to 3-star. Were you a 4-star rider or did you go to 3-star?
Only to 3-star. Yeah. Okay. I'm a victim of Derek DeGrazia, most of my 3-stars.
Is that right?
But yeah, you know, Derek, the dream destroyer DeGrazia, as we call him. You know, I was pretty successful at the 2-star level and I, you know, won an advanced and, you know, I've sort of been able to nick away and make a career out of it for quite some time and actually just stopped competitive riding about 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, we kind of, as for Karen and I, you were always on the scene as far as for us kind of, you know, we always remember you out there riding. Right, Karen?
Yeah.
It just kind of seemed like, I don't know, we kind of maybe, I think it wasn't until like the 90s that we really kind of got into, I don't know, eventing and stuff. Well, we moved away for a while and stuff. So then when we came back, it was just, there you were. Like, you were a staple living close by. So there's Danny.
Yeah.
Living out the road.
Yeah, yeah.
See the big rig driving down the road, the big horse van.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I think that's what it was. It wasn't so much how many horses I had, it was the size of my truck.
Right.
Yeah.
towing a boat.
Yeah, exactly.
That was awesome. And one thing that was always interesting, when you were eventing, you would go to Texas for the winters, which was kind of like, you were like stood alone and going to Texas.
Yeah. So I did that as a sort of a business model. And it actually worked quite well. I could see no reason for me to go to Ocala and try to make a business when you had to drive past like 8 gold medalists to get to my barn. You know, it's sort of kind of hard to compete down there to make a business when you have to drive past like legends like Bruce Davidson, David O'Connor, Karen O'Connor, Leslie Law, you know. So you have to drive past all those people to get to my barn. Like, that's not a really good, you know, business plan. So we went off to Texas. I'd been down there doing some clinics and kind of build up a bit of a following and went down there and basically flipped the switch. So instead of people going to Florida for the winter, I took people out of Texas in the heat of the summer and brought them up north and they would do the fun Area 1 shows, you know, Millbrook and Fitch's Corner. And for somebody from Texas to come north to see sort of a Millbrook or Fitch's Corner, even Fairhill, you know, like for them to be in this area and be able to gallop on those hills and see that cross country school that we have so often at Fairhill on the Tuesday, you know, they just got just such a great experience. And then they got out of the heat of Texas. So it was a really good, it worked out very well.
Like,
it worked
out really well for us. I always kind of wondered about that. That sounds
that's actually really smart.
Super smart to me. Yeah.
Hey, even a blind squirrel finds a nut in the forest, right?
So you said up until just a couple of years ago, and then you kind of got out of riding. And then I'm assuming that's kind of when the landscape kind of started taking control of your life. Can you tell us how LandSafe, you know, came to be, and how, and how, when you decided, okay, I'm not going to event anymore, and I want to, this is my new direction you wanted to go?
Yeah. So basically, you know, I sort of made it to where I felt like, you know, the next part for me wasn't going to happen, right? So sort of making it to a team and making it to that 4-star level and being that quality, it wasn't going to happen. And it's not lack of talent or lack of whatever. It just, you know, you have to, at some point in your life, you have to be honest with where you are and who you are. And, you know, for me, I'd kind of lost the competitive drive and the competitive edge. And, you know, it was time to make a bit of a change. And I just decided one day, like, you know what, I'm just done with trying, and I want to do something different. And I wasn't really sure what that was, but I knew that you shouldn't go out at the 2- and 3-star level with that attitude.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So it was definitely time. Like, I'd literally done my dressage test and came back in and told my wife, Kelly, like, yeah, just pack it up. We're kind of going home.
Wow.
So, you know, we sort of went around for a while and kind of like, what are we going to do next? And I actually wanted to move to the Bahamas and went for a job interview in the Bahamas. And Kelly was like, no, we're not moving to the Bahamas. So
what type of job was that? Was that like, what was that?
Sort of a doc running a program, sort of developing properties and sort of overseeing jobs and things like that.
That sounds pretty something good.
That's, yeah, it would have been really good.
If I was your wife, we'd be there right now, Danny.
Yeah, well. I'm gonna leave that one alone, Ralph. I'm gonna let that go. I just want you to know I'm blushing. So we decided that wasn't gonna work, and so it was sort of back to the drawing board. And years ago, I'd written the article about rider responsibility, and at that point, I thought about if I could sort of come up with a simulator that would give you that moment in time that when a horse is about to fall or when you're about to come off, and to sort of freeze that moment in time. And I'd had it in my mind for a while. And after that article, I was a bit involved with some of the organizations about looking at videos and watching videos and doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I got pretty involved in that and sort of had to back out of it because it sort of made me unable to ride. Right. So if you watch horse after horse after horse fall, it kind of got in my mind, and I had to back out of that and sort of reset. And so then when I stopped riding, it sort of came back to the forefront. There was as you all know, there Philippa Humphreys had the fatal fall at Jersey Fresh. And it was sort of that fall that actually pushed me over the edge, right? So that was 8 riders that year globally that had died.
Wow.
So it was a pretty big year. And I just felt like, you know, at some point we have to do something. And for me, sort of blaming course design and course builders and fence structure and all of that, we're sort of always blaming a lot of other issues, and maybe that we should look at ourselves a little bit. And what we can do as riders to be fitter, stronger, smarter, better. And this is my piece of it, right? I think that all of those other pieces are huge, but I also think that the rider's responsibility to understand what their job is and where they are and awareness of what that situation can and can't be, that you should have all education across all planes, right? So we should know. I sort of say LandSafe, if you read LandSafe, it says LandSafe reducing rider risk. And those are 3 R's. And those R's are right horse, right rider, right level. And that to me doesn't matter if it's, you know, the right horse, the right rider, the right level being Philip Dutton on Cannot at Kentucky, right? I mean, that's the right horse, the right rider, the right level. Mm-hmm. Or me on a 2-year-old in Montana on a trail ride, right? So that's right rider, wrong horse, wrong place, right? You know what right. I mean? So you remove any of those R's and you start to be in trouble. So you have to be, to me, to be a rider, you have to be the most equipped and educated rider that you can be for your circumstances. And whether that's trail riding or whether that's riding at the four star level, you need to understand what it is that you're doing and what it is that you're responsible for. So we had three things we had to do. We had to create a program. So that's the big picture. And in that program, there had to be a gymnastics program. And so the gymnastics program came pretty easy because Kelly, my wife, was a nationally ranked gymnast. She's a U.S. gymnastics instructor. So she has all the certification to teach the gymnastics part of it. And then I have all the knowledge of falls because I've fallen more times than most people have gotten on. And, you know, so if you say, I've done this and I've done that, I'm like, okay, well, all right, we'll sort of put that in this box over here. But, you know, but at some points in my career, you know, I was riding 25 horses a day.
Wow.
You know, that sort of creates a different level, right? And when you race ride, that creates a different level of risk. Mm-hmm. And so you see a lot more and you see it a lot more often. And so a lot of the experiences that I've gotten are through not just eventing, but also just riding on a daily basis also in racing. So my spectrum is a lot larger than the average person. And so we had that. So then we had to build the simulator. So we had to put those pieces together. And the gymnastics part, like I said, was kind of easy. We were actually working on the program, Kelly and I, and every day I would search on the internet for sort of what are they doing? Like, what are they doing in Germany for rider fall training safety? What are they doing in France? What are the safety measures? What are the training measures? And sort of struggling to find what was going on. Now, the British Racing School in England did open up their program to the eventers in England. But it was, I'm not knocking their program, but I don't feel like it was quite interjected the way we are really trying to, we really created a program to bring out to, you know, non-professionals, right? To not jockeys, okay, to others. So if you're in England, you have, and you want to ride races, you have to go through the British Racing School.
Okay.
Right. So there is, they go through some fall training program. And so they sort of opened that up and tried to bring it into the eventing, but it wasn't quite what we're doing. So we then sort of set out on that mission. And one day I found a video online of a guy in Australia. And that guy's name is Lindsay Nyland. And he has actually written a book called Surviving the Unexpected. And the reason he wrote that book was not only did they lose some eventers in Australia, but a couple of years ago, 4 years ago, they lost two apprentice jockeys. And he's a big racing advocate. And he sort of looked at that program and said, how come you don't have a fall training program? And so I reached out to him and we ended up going to Australia and training with him for a couple of weeks, which was great because he had already sort of laid out the groundwork for teaching sort of the average person how to roll from not knowing anything to a dive roll in a pretty good sequence that we can get people from zero to skilled in, mm-hmm, in a short amount of time.
Did, right, he have a simulator? So that's
kind of important. No, doesn't. He uses a horse, like a mechanical bull with a horse body on it.
Okay.
He uses that in a way, but he didn't quite have the simulation tactics that were in my mind. And so we still talk. I'm actually supposed to talk with him again next week. He's actually working on his PhD right now. And I don't, I'm not actually sure what he's way smarter than I am. but he went to the Olympics for gymnastics. He went to Arizona State, you know, he coached the elite gymnastics team in Australia and he knows his stuff. And so we were lucky to do that. And in the meantime, I was sort of building the simulator and I sort of found a guy that was built stunt equipment and he helped me and we designed it and got together and it was actually out west and kind of put all the pieces together. And then, you know, all of a sudden the program launched and I have to say we did our homework. Like, you know, we've changed a few things like the simulator. We added a second chain to, and we changed the way the wheels are. And the gymnastics program, you know, is pretty much rock solid. We haven't changed much there. And the program on the simulator, we've added some things as we've gone along that, that we're just, you know, we haven't cut anything out. You know, we just keep adding things that are, that we see people use, need, like, you were super happy. Super happy.
What can the simulator do? Like, what's the difference? It travels and then it tilt. Like, how does it?
How does it go? So yeah. It's on a 24 foot long track. So you sort of think of train tracks, and it will run down that track, and it will dump into a rotational fall. But we also turn the saddle around, and we use it for rearing up and sort of escape routes for rearing. We change the degree and the angle of it so that you can, so we call it the off the shoulder, which is kind of, you know, most people don't have rotational falls, right? Usually like the horse stops and he drops his head and you go flying off over his head and you land on your back with both your arms open, holding on to the reins. And, you know, you get a bit of a smack to the head and a bit of a concussion and maybe you get stepped up. You know what I mean? Like, so we kind of go through that scenario, which is actually kind of the most important scenario that we go through. The rotational fall is the most dangerous fall that is out there. And you know, what's interesting to me, I learned, and I didn't know this, but they had 6 rotational falls at one of the reining competitions a couple of years ago.
Really?
You think about a rotational fall, and you think about a horse hanging his leg.
Sure.
Right? Or we think about a rotational fall as a horse rolling over, right? So head goes down, butt comes over the top. So evidently, and I didn't know this, that they slide and overstep sometimes and grab themselves. And so they will actually roll over
in the slide.
You know, fox hunting and trail riding, you know, horses step in holes. You know, basically a rotational fall is anytime a horse's head goes down below its wither and the hind end comes over the top of it.
Right.
So you don't necessarily have to jump to all of a sudden have the ground hurtling towards your head. So there's a bit of a difference of what a rotational fall is defined as.
Yeah. Huh. Well, are any of the Western people, have you reached out to any of those guys and said, hey?
So interesting you say that. It's like, yeah, you know, what I am, you know, for obvious reasons, passionate about the eventing, right? Mm-hmm. And about this sport. And we are two people that have sort of started this. And every couple of weeks, our army grows by 15 people or 12 people or 20 people. And we are focused on the eventing for now. You know, our next move would be to sort of, and I actually did talk to the NSA today, which is the National Steeplechase Association, just because we were there having another meeting and sort of said, hey, you know, you're our next on our target list of people that we would like to get involved in this program. Ideally this program is for anybody that rides. You put your foot in a stirrup, you have a chance of falling off. I always sort of say that, you know, riding horses is an extreme sport. Whether you trail ride or whether you do 4-star eventing, or somebody was talking about the Mongolian Derby, which is some ridiculous race in Mongolia.
Crazy,
like, yeah, right? Like, I mean, it's an extreme sport. So you sort of have to open yourself to understanding that. And what does that mean, right? Like, so if you're going to be an extreme mountain biker, or you're going to be an extreme snow skier, you can't go to Switzerland and go out back without having avalanche training, right?
Sure.
So we have to sort of start to think about things and like, look, you know, if you want to play an extreme sport, then you have to have the training that it takes to be in all scenario, right? Not just in, oh, well, I'm just going to ride. Well, part of riding is falling, and what are you going to do if you have a fall, and what is your thought process in that? And that's kind of what we're trying to bring out to the forefront here.
Yeah, and you have different levels. Is that correct? Am I understanding that right?
Yeah. So we have like basically 3 levels, and you can't just sign up and say, well, I want to do the advanced level. It doesn't really work that way. So we have an introductory level, which is basically just teaching you the body shaping, the rolling, and introducing you to all of the simulated falls, right? So off the shoulder, rear, emergency dismount, and rotational.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it starts. So then, you know, you get through that and you want to go to the next level, which is a training level. What we do then is we start to we thin up the mats. In other words, instead of rolling on a 4-inch mat, you now roll on a 2-inch mat.
Okay.
Or you roll on a cushion, right? So you're starting to sort of go, oh, yep, that didn't feel too good. right. So I guess my back was a little open, right? So you sort of start to recognize that.
Gotcha.
And we start to add a little bit of speed and surprise to the machine. And so, you know, the first time, you know, when you're going to fall off, somebody's there spotting you. Everything is very safe, secure, and regimented. And as you move up sort of through the training level, we take that away. There's no more spot. We start to add surprise. We start to add speed. And then in the advanced level, you know, that's pretty easy, right? You've already know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. We're just going to put your helmet and your vest on you if you're an event rider. If you're a polo player, we're going to put your polo helmet on you and your polo mallet in your hand.
That's cool.
And so you start to deal with all of the things that are around you. If you're a hunter jumper, we're going to put your coat on you and your stock tie and your tall boots. And, you know, we're going to put you in that situation and kind of let you feel what that equipment feels like. And so people sort of say, well, why don't you use a helmet? Well, we don't use a helmet in the beginning, but we do use a helmet in the end. And the reason we don't use a helmet in the beginning is because the gymnastics mats are, they're taking that impact and they're absorbing it, right? So that dense mat is collapsing, and a helmet is designed to slide across the top of a firm surface. So actually the helmet could cause you more damage if you had it on the mats.
Brilliant.
Right. So then once you're sort of trained and we're watching you and you're proficient in your chin to chest and your head is clear of the mat, then we know that you're not going to get tangled up, and then we'll put a helmet on you.
Wow. That's brilliant. You're not just winging it, Danny. I mean, it's,
no, sir.
It's obvious.
No, you know,
clearly have. Well, because, you know, I mean, like it's very easy for someone on the outside to say, listen, what, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you've thought of it. You guys have really done your homework on this, and it's brilliant. This is awesome.
Yeah, I try to tell people all the time. It's like, I know everybody, you know, a lot of people out in the eventing world know me and know that I'm kind of wide open and wild and don't hold much back. But the truth is, I'm actually quite educated and just kind of I don't really worry about too much. But no, we did, you know, I spent 2 years with a guy called Mike Pilato, studying, you know, body mechanics and how the body works. And so there's a whole nother part of this program that's going to get introduced in the next year, which is the physical fitness aspect of it. And you know, sort of a lot of that part of that, you know, we want you to stay on, we don't want you to fall off. So the more educated we can make you, the better we can make you fitness-wise, strength-wise, conditioning-wise, less chance you have to fall off. I don't want you to use my 500 milliseconds of training. I want you to use all the other stuff that we give you.
Sure.
But if all that other stuff doesn't work and something has happened, then I want you to know where the fire exit is, you know, how you should pull on that airbag or look or you know, whatever that situation is, that you have the best chance for the best possible outcome, and that your education doesn't stop 500 milliseconds from the ground.
Yeah, no doubt. That's terrible. Now, I love it. This is so awesome, Danny. Thank you for doing this. The people, you know, you say every week or two, you know, your army's growing, you're getting, you know, 15, 20 people more and more on board. It's you're the snowball is going. Now you're starting to get some people that have taken your course and are testifying to that this has helped them. So just recently at the end of October, Eventing Nation just had a story on someone that took your class and.
Yeah. Leland Gusick. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Leland, she was curious about the program from the get go. And she did a course at John Hollings this winter in Ocala, and then had us out to her farm in the spring, summer, July, and had us out there and brought a bunch of her client students, people from the Illinois area to her clinic, and did a second time. And then she had a fall, and I feel like she called me on her way back to the barn. You know what I mean? Like, wow. Thank you. And that's a 4-star rider, right? That's a rider with a fair bit of experience. You know, we've had people get bucked off. We've had people do emergency dismounts. And, you know, my email list keeps growing of people that are calling us, or you know, nobody calls anymore, but they send emails, you know, sort of emailing us, texting us, you know, thank you, you know, this worked. And they tell us their story, and we're so happy, you know, that it does work. You know, sometimes we get these emails and we open them up and they're like, we're like, oh God, please be good news, you know, and it, you know, I'm sure one of these days somebody's going to say, you know what, I tried shit and it didn't work. But I think for the most part, you know, we feel like we give people education, we give them an idea, we help them, you know, and they're coming through. You know, when I started this program, I said, if I save one life, it's worth it, right? So it's worth all the investment, the financial investment, it's worth all the time investment, it's worth all the emotional investment if I save one person. And so, you know, hopefully I've done that, and then it is all worth it.
Yeah, heck yeah.
You know, what I don't think that our program will save everybody. I don't think that, but if we can help, if we could have reduced that number 2 years ago from 8 to 6,
yeah,
or from, you know, 8 to 5, you know, that's a big difference, right? And that's a big, big difference to the people that are affected by it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. So, you know, we really want to help, you know, and we really do care. And so, you know, the more, you know, like for you guys to call us and have this interview is great. And, you know, to get behind it and, you know, sort of, you sort of said in the beginning about the buck thing, you know, we have Buck Davidson, you know, has done has seen the program and had the Area 1 Young Riders, his young rider team that went to Montana go through the program because he believed in it so much. John Hollings, you know, he's done the program. Doug Payne, Lee Langusik, you know, these are all 4-star riders that are supporting this program. The USEA gave us a grant. They're behind the program. And so, you know, it just, we want it to grow faster probably than it is. But it is growing, you know?
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, it sure is. Now you mentioned, Buck and Mike Pilato. You do have a new clinic series coming up, Bringing Safety to the Forefront, starting the end of December. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so we're pretty excited, right? Because Buck is about as exciting of a cross country rider as you can watch, right? Like, and his ability, his stick ability, his tenacity, his aggression is unparalleled, really. And we sort of sat and talked about, you know, how we could bring these two things together, because like I said, you know, we want you to stay on. And what we want to do with Buck is sort of say, hey, look, these are the things, instead of practice them perfect, you're going to learn what it is to sort of jump through a combination, you know, with one hand, right? You're going to learn some defensive riding techniques. You're going to learn to do the things that Buck, it seems like only Buck can do, but he's going to help you sort of see what that picture looks like. And, you know, with the Land Safe program involved with that, you know, all of a sudden you can see how understanding what it is when things go wrong helps you stay on longer. You know, like you're more likely to stay there. You're more likely to be able to have the skills to pull out an amazing save, you know, if all of your options are open. And then, you know, with Mike Pilato, he did a lot of research with Charles Owen, in concussion study, and his ability to help you strengthen your weaknesses, which again are going to help you stay on, are unparalleled. To watch him work with an equestrian is something that has to be seen to really understand. But he can watch you ride by, and you know, a lot of people out there can sort of say, oh, well, you're sitting off this way, or you're sitting off that way, or, you know, you're twisting this, or you know, and you sort of look at your body and go like that. But he can tell you why you're doing that and what you have to strengthen in order not to do that.
Wow.
So, yeah, so we're going one step further, right? So, you know, let's just say you always twist to the right. Well, there's a reason why you do that. or you always nod, or you get pitched forward, or you fall back, or whatever that sort of bad habit is that you have, or that inconsistency in your riding. You know, he can look at you and go, okay, yep, we see that, but this is why. Well, this muscle group isn't firing. Well, so maybe you're protecting that old injury. So we have to fix that injury so we can do this, so we can do that. And it just takes it to a whole different level. And it seems complex, but it's not. It's very easy. It's very easy when you work with the best. And Mike is one of the best out there for sure.
Wow. So when people go down there, you're going to be doing – there's going to be some Buck doing the cross country, and then you guys are going to be kind of rotating in your program, Buck's program, and then Mike is going to kind of bring it all together as he's watching everybody and individually try to.
So, exactly. So what'll happen is you come down and you go through the Land Safe program. So you do a bunch of gymnastics stuff. And then there'll be sort of two groups that run through the gymnastics program. So there's only availability for 20 people. So there'll be two groups of 10. And while you're doing the gymnastics, Mike will be watching you. And then you'll go out in groups of, I think it's five, to do cross-country schooling with Buck and work on defensive riding techniques. And then, you know, in your break time, Mike's going to work with groups of, you know, two, three, four people and go, okay, look, let me look at you. He's already watched you go through the gymnastics program, so he's already seen what your body wants to do.
Gotcha.
And then he can help you sort of develop a customized plan to help you with that weakness, right? So, for example, a lot of people, when they jump off of the trampoline and jump up and land on the blocks, you know, their knees dive in or they pitch themselves forward. And those are just two sort of things that I'll point out. So Mike can show you that, look, the reason why your knees are diving in is because your hips aren't open. Your hips aren't open because your calves aren't strong enough. And he'll run through that whole system with you and help you get that fitness. If you're getting pitched forward, your core muscles or your lower back or your shoulder blades aren't strong enough, then what can we do to help you?
Wow.
If you have an old injury and you're, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say nursing that along or protecting that a little bit, you know, he can help you strengthen that old injury so you're not compensating for it. It's for everybody. Like it's amazing. It's amazing to see. It's amazing to watch. And it's definitely amazing to be part of.
That is awesome.
And then on the Sunday, well, Saturday night, we have a big cookout by, you know, Buck. I don't know if you guys notice about Buck, but he can cook. he really can. He's a good chef. So we bought him a chef's hat. And he's going to cook dinner for everybody on Saturday night. And then, on Sunday, we're going to have a bit of a competition to put your skills together and have a good time, a team competition and sort of make a big good time out of everything that you learned, because, you know, we call it accidental learning, right? You're having fun and all of a sudden you accidentally learn something. And so we sort of want to bring that part to it as well.
That's awesome. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
And then I think the plan is we're going to shoot down there. We're going to come down and we're probably going to, you know, video a little bit and maybe interview some folks and all that. So, you know, if anyone listening, if the whole Land Safe and Buck thing doesn't bring you down, they get to meet Karen and me.
Right.
Yes.
Well, you get that. And, you know, the best thing about Florida is it's Florida.
Yes. Right.
you know. It might be a little chilly one day, but it won't be the next day. And you know, you can definitely make an excuse to go to Florida anytime. And you know, we're doing it during that Christmas New Year break, so it's a great Christmas present if you want to give it to somebody. Give it to yourself. I can promise you about this clinic; it will be one of the best clinics. Now we're going to do four more in the following year. Hopefully, we're going to do California, Texas, Colorado, and New England. And those dates will be set in the next couple of months. But they'll be the same clinic format, but in different locations. Because, you know, Buck and I are serious about keeping the sport alive and keeping it safe and making it as safe as we can, but not by changing the sport, you know, but by educating riders and helping them become better, more educated riders.
Awesome. Man, I'm with you, man. I think this is fantastic, Danny. And
yeah, you're going to sign up now, right?
I want to see Rob on the horse.
Karen, I can make that happen for you. Okay. After the wife comment.
Oh, no way, man. No way. No, you'll never get me on there.
We'll get you on. We at least got to get one good picture. You know, okay.
Oh, that's so funny. But yeah, that sounds awesome. And you know, I think, I mean, honestly, you're combining two really awesome clinics into one. I just think that sounds like a no brainer, you know, like it's just,
well,
if you only have time
for awesome.
A lot of times people say, hey, look, I only have, you know, enough vacation or enough time to do one, you know, clinic. Well, this is perfect, you know, where you can do the safety and you get the ride with Buck. And I don't know. I just think it's, we're so excited. Well, Buck actually called us and asked if we can kind of, you know, when you guys first started talking about this, if we can help get behind promoting it. And, we were so excited to do it. So we're sincerely on board with what you were doing, Danny, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I tell you, to be honest, like to get Buck on with us as well, you know, Buck's reputation and his stature in the sport to get behind my program. And Buck's probably is as honest as I am in the fact that if he didn't like the program, he wouldn't get behind it.
Oh, of course.
Right. You know, yep. And to have somebody of that level sort of look at it and go, man, this is needed. This is important. And I want to be part of it. It means a ton to me for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, change is tough, especially in like the horse world. I think that, you know, anytime there's a new, you think about an air vest that when they first came out, I mean, people were like, you know, I mean, like everything takes time for it to kind of take hold. So I think that, I think actually your growth is pretty good. You know, with the change and how unique it is and all. So, hey, one more quick question about LandSafe and the stages. So you said there's basically like three levels. So if someone did one of your clinics, so when you host the clinic, are you hosting, is it like if you come to town or something, is like, does someone have to declare this is a level one clinic, or how does that work? And then for someone who's already been and wants to do the next level, are they welcome to any of your clinics, or are there certain ones for certain levels?
Certain ones for certain levels. No. So basically because the machine is one-on-one, right? And the gymnastics is sort of circular, right? So you're sort of in line and you go through. We can adapt what we're doing for the people.
Okay.
Eventually, I think, hopefully, eventually, you know, we're going to come and we're going to do, you know, in the morning is going to be level one, and the afternoon is going to be level two.
Okay.
But right now we have to. We don't have enough people ready to do level two to make a level two. But I'll give you an example. This weekend we were at that equine affair. And we had a girl come because she did one in Massachusetts and she came to do her second level. And, you know, she fit right in. And what was pretty cool about that was, you know, the people that were doing the first level got to see what the second level looks like. And
gotcha.
They're like, oh, we definitely want to do that. But it's like, you know, they understood also why that it is progressional, mm-hmm. right? So we can't teach you to do a back roll until we teach you to do a back drop. We can't gotcha. Teach you to land backwards until we teach you to land forwards. And so the other great, great part about the level thing is that it's so over, there's so much information that you get in 2 days. You know, we talked about this in the beginning of, should it be a 6 day program? Well, I think it is a 6 day program, right? It's 2 days of intro, 2 days of training, 2 days of advanced. And really the advanced level ends up being 1 day. You know what I mean? Because these people know how to roll. They know what they're doing. And it is quick. Like you come in, you put your helmet on, you put your vest on, you rock and roll right through this. And the training level, you know, it's not necessarily that you get to do one training level. Sometimes you might have to do two or three. And some people may never want to go to the advanced level. But we can tailor that to each individual right now.
Gotcha.
No matter what level we're doing, right? We can interject an advanced rider into it. We can introduce a training level rider into an intro level. Doesn't really matter. And we try to make sure everybody has a good time.
Cool. Well, that way, yeah, I want to make sure that if anyone's listening at home and they're, had questions and all, figure if I'm thinking about it, maybe someone else is. And when you were at Equine Affair, you guys were actually teaching. You weren't just there as like an exhibition. You were actually given.
We did two clinics. We did one Thursday, Friday, and one Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, wow. With spectators, like people standing around watching?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
It was. Yeah, we did. We had an audience. I felt we were pretty lucky. The people that the participants, they zoned out. Like they didn't even notice the crowd. The people that were around us, they wanted to be around us next year. They're like, "You brought a lot of people over to watch." I'm like, "Well, that's
yeah. Yeah, the vendors next door."
Yeah. They're like, "Where are you going to be next year? We're not sure we're next to you."
That's brilliant.
So, yeah. It does have an entertainment value to it as well. Especially when, once the machine starts running and people are coming off of it. But, the sort of the misconception about the program a little bit is like, "Oh, can I get on that?" And you're like, yeah, you can, but it's a 2-day program, you know? Oh, can they, we had a bunch of parents walk up with their kids and they're like, "Oh, we knew this was going to be here. So can we do it?" We're like, it's 4 hours twice a day. You have to do 2 hours on the gym mats. It's not an entertainment thing. It's not a bucking bull at $5 a spin. You know what I mean? And so that sometimes is a little bit hard to get people to understand from the outside because they don't know about the program yet, but you guys are going to make that difference for
absolutely
me.
Yeah,
Danny, just my business brain is saying Danny needs to double your space on the floor and then just sublet.
Yeah, you can be near me, but you're going to pay me. I'm going to rent the whole arena. Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, I don't have that business brain. I decided to go out and reinvent the wheel, and do something completely off the charts, and it wasn't Facebook.
So funny. So, hey, listen, as we start winding down, we always like to recognize any type of sponsors or anything that's behind you. So do you have any, do you and Landsafe have any sponsors or anything like that that helps keep you guys going?
Help support. Yeah. So we actually, I'm pretty excited. Like we actually just hooked up with AeroWear, which is Charles Owen's body vest and the air protector, which I'm just a huge fan of Charles Owen. Point Two has helped us out. They're behind us as well. All the safety companies are sort of seeing a benefit in what we're doing. And they want to get involved with us. Lee Middleton at Point Two is just a super, super guy and a great friend. We have Tech Stirrups. Tech Stirrups is a safety stirrup. They're aluminum within the outer arm opens up so you won't get stuck in them. To help you not get tangled up. They're like we call them a hybrid peacock stirrup. For those of you out there that know what peacock stirrups are, they're a wide base stirrup with an arm that breaks away. And then Tag Code, is a great, instead of having to wear your armband, I don't know about everybody else, but my skinny little arms, my armband used to fall down around my elbow all the time. Nightmare. Like it really wasn't, it used to drive me insane. And no matter how tight I tried to make it or whatever, but that's probably me because I got a little pelican arms. But the Tag Code bracelets are great. They've got a bunch of different things too. Like you can put them on your horse and your horse will have his ID card and all that. So you can check out the Tag Code. And then one more is Nupa Feed. And Nupa Feed is a magnesium supplement for those of you that don't know. And they also have a carotene supplement as well. But the magnesium supplement is the one that's really kind of part of our team because it's a calming agent, right? So it makes your nervous horse a bit more calm. And I used it on my Will Smith horse, which, if anybody wants to look up his record, you can see exactly when I started using the machine. You can scroll right through there and you can just see exactly when Nupa Feed kicked into his diet. And you know, Scott Adcox and Bonnie Fisher over at NUPA, they are just, you know, they are just behind the program. Scott actually drives, drives pairs, combined driving, and just saw the program and got behind it. He's been, you know, I have to say he was probably, you know, one of the first people to really sort of step up and go, man, I really love what you're doing and how can we help? So we're really happy with NUPA Feed and Charles Owen, Point Two, Texter, Tag Code. You know, these are all people that are behind us and we're super happy to have them.
Awesome. Awesome. That's fantastic. And you introduced us to Scott. He was a really nice guy and,
yeah,
he doesn't pull any punches either. He was, when you introduced us to him, he said he was telling us that he would watch riders that had rough horses. And then when they came out of the ring, he's like, I got the product for you.
So yeah. Yeah.
He's got, now that's a guy with a business mind.
Yep.
No, and he did that to me too. I didn't, you know, we kind of knew each other, but never really formally introduced. And he walked up to me and said that after the 2-star at Fairhill, the first one I did with Will Smith, and I thought I was going to climb off and hit him. You think you can help me? Sure enough, I called him about March, and he helped us out at Red Hills for sure.
He's a gentleman.
Yeah. And I tell you, you know, that's one of the things about, and you all know that, like, about eventing and about this sport, is that everybody pulls together, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, we have a great team behind us, and you know, like minds think alike, and you know, with everyone that's in this, we're all thinking about how do we make this sport better, safer for everyone. And no matter what that is, whether that's taking care of the horse, taking care of the rider, it doesn't matter. You know, we want everybody to be happy, safe, and successful.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
That sounds awesome. I love what you guys are doing, Danny.
So, how can our listeners follow you?
Oh my God, I'm the worst with the social media thing. I honestly tried. Like, we have Facebook. I think I have like 3 followers. We do better than that. But we're Landsafe Reducing Rider Risk on Facebook. Mm-hmm. If you go to Landsafe on Facebook, it'll say go to Landsafe Reducing Rider Risk, because that's what I figured out to do. And Instagram, you know, we have a Landsafe thing there, but I don't really do much with that. But our website is www.landsafeequestrian.com. And all of the information that we have is on there. Email contacts, cell phone numbers, all of it. And, you know, we are quite small. You know, it's just Kelly and I right now, and that's who answers the phone when you call. That's who answers your email. So if you have questions, you know, we are happy to answer. If you want to have a clinic, we're happy to tell you how to make that happen. If you want to come to a clinic, we can tell you where we're going to be. So that's our best way, www.landsafeequestrian.com.
Danny, thank you so much. This is, you know, I sincerely thank you for taking the bull by the horns and doing this. I know you're not getting rich off of this, and I know it's been a lot of work, and, I just, you're making a difference out there, buddy. And we really, really appreciate it. And we're really behind you 100%.
Well, thanks. But I'm just going to break in there. You know, you said I'm not getting rich off of this. Well, I will say this, you know, that horse that we have, he doesn't eat very much. So he's a little bit cheaper than the ones that I was feeding all those years trying to continue.
Yeah,
I bet.
That's so funny. Awesome. Well, hey, Danny, thank you so much. And, we'll see you down in Ocala.
Rob, Karen, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it. We'll see you down there.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's show. Remember to subscribe to Major League Eventing's podcast and give us a rating on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can always contact us at majorleagueeventing@gmail.com. Cheers.